This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Besser deep to his forehand before wiring it. Glove side pass Blackwood, and here they come again. Jake DeBrusk scores. He's got his first as a Canuck. He beats Blackwood from the left circle as Vancouver entered the zone again. Quinn Hughes sets him up. Foley again to Granlund. Top of the circle. Waits. Shoots. Scores! Mikhail Granlund wires his sixth of the season past Kevin Lankinen. The Sharks had six skaters on the ice with 1:17 left in the third.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
To the near point for Soucy. Shoots. Couldn't get it to go. I think Blackwood got a piece of it set up. Fred Suter scores! Hughes Suter with his second of the night on a one-timer in the slot. Set up by Garland out of the left corner. And the Canucks grab the lead back with 25.7 seconds left in the third. It's Vancouver 3 and San Jose 2.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks with a thriller in San Jose, a 3-2 victory in the last minute. Teams trading goals in the third period, and this one a victory for the Vancouver Canucks. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. We are going to bring in Landon Ferraro into the conversation in just a moment. You can grab a phone line 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. And I'm not sure, Bick, the Canucks played any closer to their identity tonight. So I'm really curious to hear the head coach's thoughts. But at the end of the day, 2 points are 2 points.
It's 2 points.
You're on the road. You got to win. And hey, coming off the game against the Devils, it was imperative that they bounce back to some degree, and getting the points are the things that matter the most. But I'm not sure they played any better as far as their 5-on-5 game goes.
Well, they definitely played better than Wednesday, but
I mean, it
wasn't a marked improvement.
Right.
And I think, you know, a trend that might be emerging here so far through the beginning of the season is they do play to their competition a little bit.
Yeah, very fair, but which is also something you wanted to see them. Okay, you wanted to see them play better. They won the game ultimately, mm-hmm. right? And that's all that matters. And another chance to constructively work on your game, right? You have two games to go on the road trip, so I'm not going to boo a win. A win's a win. You're happy to win the game. But I just didn't love how they played, and I thought they gave the Sharks way too much. And even at the very end, there was a wide-open chance with a second left for the Sharks. I forget who it was, but he whiffed on the shot, and Lankinen doesn't even need to make the save. But they came oh so close to tying it again in the dying second. So a very helter-skelter third period, I thought.
That was one of those moments where maybe when you're driving and you have a friend in the passenger seat and you like just avoid a collision and you look to your friend and you're like, we dodged that one right there. Because Zetterlund is wide open with 2 seconds left.
Yeah, and he just couldn't
connect. It's going to be a goal. It's going to be a goal if he just directs it into a general area and he just whiffs. And you just, I imagine five guys look at the ice and like, man, we got away with that one.
Yeah, I don't know if they got away with the game necessarily because I thought they still were better than San Jose. But overall, that's the thing that we're going to hear from the head coach coming up in a bit. But let's bring in Landon Ferraro into the conversation, calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor. I know, Landon, we spent so much time talking about the details heading into this game and the Canucks playing a cleaner game. Ultimately, getting the 2 points is what matters the most, but what did you think of the way they got the 2 points tonight?
You know, I thought they played, for the most part, they played very well. There was, you know, the obvious the start of the second period, you know, to just over halfway through, that San Jose definitely was in control and really moving. But past that, you know, I thought the Canucks skated well tonight. They forechecked well. They got pucks to the net. You know, they didn't give up as many odd man rushes. There were still some very dangerous ones that came back down at them, but not nearly as many as the last few games. So I think all in all, it was a pretty good game.
Suter, the big hero tonight, like he was in the playoffs, helped send them to the next round as well. But he is huge in this game with 2 goals. And, you know, it's just funny, like the guys who are tasked in a spot where he can play fourth line, but he's got flashes of ability where he can do what he did today with those 2 shots.
He's literally like he is the Swiss Army knife. Like, he can do anything that is asked of him, not, you know, not saying to a superstar level, but he's very competent across the board. You know, he did a good job of protecting some pucks down low tonight. But not only that, obviously, when the chances were there for him, you know, there was no mistake. He just hammered them home. Like, that one-timer goal, I said it on air there, like you can watch him doing that after every morning skate, and I'm sure he does it on most of the other practice days. Like that is a muscle memory one-timer that he doesn't really have to think where it's going. He knows just off his body position that this is going to be hard into the far side. It was a beautiful shot.
Well, and you know, we talked so much about and wondered if we were going to see some lineup changes for this game, and we didn't see it going into the game, and some questions about can Arshdeep Bains continue to play alongside Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland, and the coach makes a switch in the third period. He gets Pugh Suter on that line, and you mentioned the shot, but it looked like that line just kind of came to life once Pugh Suter got on it.
Yeah, every once in a while, like, it needs a different look. Arshdeep Bains has done a very good job coming in here, but it's really his first real stretch. Like, I know he had had games last year, but this is his first real stretch with the team where it's not just a call-up. It feels more like he's part of it. And, you know, it's very hard in your first year to be consistent every single night. And Rick Tocchet saw that that line needed a little bit of a boost, and Suter had been putting a good game together. And, you know, it kind of took off from there, like you said.
Also, Jake DeBrusk, I imagine, a big sigh of relief. And he scored his first last season on November 2nd, gets his first this year on November 2nd. I don't know what it is. Maybe he just, you know, waits for Halloween to the season to start. But he gets his first goal. I imagine a huge weight off his shoulders as well.
Yeah, he must be a big candy guy. He must have got a little extra boost from hammering some Halloween candy. But no, I mean, you could see it on his face after when they show him on the bench. He's just got a massive smile on his face. Not only is it a big goal for the team in the moment, but that's a massive goal for a guy that signs, you know, a very good contract with a new team. That new team is literally coast to coast from the other one in Boston where he came from. And it's taken him a little bit of time to get more comfortable, but you can see his game building, and, you know, shooters shoot. And when they get that opportunity, he's not going to miss that. Like, that is a very good shot, but that's also someone that, you know, that's what he does. That's what he was signed for. And you're going to see that more often than not. Than what, you know, the kind of snake bitten we've seen through the first nine games.
Absolutely. And we saw Canuck finally get off the schneid, and that was Jake DeBrusk getting his first. And you kind of saw the relief on his face after scoring. You can kind of see his game slowing down a little bit, almost overthinking things. And you can tell he's a player that's putting a lot on his shoulders. How big do you think it is for him to finally get that first goal out of the way?
Huge. It's like, and huge is an understatement. Like, it's already a stressful situation when you're, you know, not counted on to be offensive. Like, your numbers need to be there every night. But as you get, you know, into the double digits of games played and you still have that goose egg in your stat column, like, it's tough to look at. And it's something that, you know, you're walking around town on an off day and you kind of just see something and it reminds you, like, yeah, I still haven't scored. Mm-hmm. So to put that in, like, it's just a huge weight off his chest. You know, he's deserved to have a goal by now. So now it's in. It'll just feel like the season's finally starting for him, is how I imagine he's feeling right now.
28 shots on goal tonight for the Canucks. 22 other shots were blocked. 21 other shots missed the net. So they end up with, quick maths here, I think 71 attempts over the course of the night. You know, it's overall they had the puck in the zone, obviously, a great deal in San Jose's end. But, you know, did they really maximize enough opportunities tonight?
No, I would have liked to, well, one, the shots from the point, you know, there was a lot that missed high or wide, mm-hmm. or sometimes high and wide, you know, so it would be nice to see, you know, you're not going to get every shot from the point on net, like, that's just not possible, there's, you know, the players are just too good in front of you, but if you could get, you know, if you said they missed about 20, you know, if they could get another 7 of those on net, like, that's a lot. You don't know what's going to come from those rebounds and things like that. But, you know, I mentioned it to Batch, I believe, in the second period. You could see every shot from sharp angles. Blackwood was, you know, they were hitting him and dropping in his feet. Like, it would have been nice to see some more, you know, them try and make him make those saves and hold on to him a bit more with some bodies at net. I think there was a bit more work, you know, an opportunity to be done from, you know, within a couple feet of the net there.
I did want to ask you a little bit about the blue line and the fact that tonight they had two lefties playing together, and Erik Brännström and Derek Forbort, who returned to the lineup. And on a couple of occasions when there were two lefties out, one was on the goal, the Nico Sturm goal, the first goal. You kind of saw Forbort and Brännström end up on the same side. There was a chance late in the second period or first period where the Sharks got a great opportunity where Forbort and Hughes ended up on the same side. Is that just kind of working through having a lefty on the right side and not having that lefty-righty kind of combination, and that just kind of needs more work, or did you see something else there?
Well, I mean, on the first goal, you know, they do get a little bit of a mix-up, but at the same time, when that puck gets to the right hash wall or hash mark and then thrown into the middle of the ice, Brännström standing just about at the right face-off dot in the defensive zone, and as soon as the puck is moved to the middle, there's already the offside winger standing there, the other defenseman, and then Brännström decides he's going to run to try and go help in the slot. That shot's taken by Luke Cunningham, and it bounces off the pad and goes right to Sturm. If Brännström just holds his position there and doesn't get a little too excited to go help, that rebound is right onto his stick and there's nothing to worry about. So I think it's a bit more about just some positioning after the fact. You're going to have points where you end up on the same side, or you have a bit of a mix-up, like it's hockey. The game moves fast and things happen. It's about how what you do when that breakdown happens. And most of the time, less is more. If Brännström just stands there, the play's dead after that, no matter what.
He did it again. It was Kevin Lankinen looking sharp in big moments, right? There was the Eklund breakaway that leads right to that first Suter goal. And then even early on in this third period, a big rebound save after a long shift. And he just looks like, you know, this is his crease, and he's just constantly confident right now.
Yeah, and it feels, I don't know about you guys, but to me it almost feels like he didn't really do much tonight, because we're so used to seeing him making these unbelievable saves, holding them in games. And, or, you know, if they are winning, then it's like literally just kind of saving them along. But tonight, there wasn't as many high danger situations. But again, the mark of a good goalie is it doesn't matter if there's 15 grade A's or two, he makes the saves and keeps them in the game and keeps the game tight. You know, if he lets a couple of those in, there's no late comeback anymore. You're chasing the game from too far.
Landon, great stuff, man. Always a pleasure chatting with you after the game, and we look forward to chatting with you again very soon.
Yeah, have a good night, guys.
That is Landon Ferraro with the call tonight after the Canucks, with the Canucks and Sharks alongside Brendan Batchelor. And that is the game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. It's Satyar Shah with Bik Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And we'll get to the phone boards coming up in a bit, but a lot of reaction on text inbox. People are happy with the win, but at the same time, they wanted to see a bit more from the squad. But what are you seeing on the text inbox?
650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Corey from GP, boring game to the last 5 minutes. I'm glad we won. Not a nice game, but they won. This one from Nate Suter. For bumper spot on power play one after that game-winning goal. That was a nasty shot. This one, Fish Dancer, looked like two even teams going at it. Not good if you're the Canucks. And Greg in New Brunswick. Puce is loose. That's it. Just Puce is loose.
I mean, Puce was fantastic. I thought Puce had a fantastic game here tonight. And, you know, we're going back and forth here, too. People texting in. Dave in Kelowna texts in and says, from West Kelowna, says, interesting how Landon had a different view than you guys did, or me, personally. Mm-hmm. And mentions that he thought the Canucks played a fast-skating game. I mean, I thought the Canucks did a lot of good things. But I thought tonight their details were not great. The Canucks gave up more rush chances than they allowed tonight. And they had some bad line changes that led to a couple of chances against. Again, like, it wasn't a bad performance. I just don't think that it was a stellar performance overall. And I thought they gave up probably more than they should have given up in this game.
The third period was probably their best period as far as what they gave up the other direction. You know, I think the best chance San Jose had in that third period was probably the Will Smith chance where he gets set up by, I think it was Goudreau centering the pass, but I think that was really about it. The first two periods, you know, I kind of disagree with Landon there, is that there were some rush chances. Obviously, the Eklund breakaway, there was 4-on-3s, 4-on-2s, 3-on-1s, the Grundstrom chance in the first period. So, you know, San Jose, I think, left a lot of meat on the bone for scoring opportunities tonight. But by the end of it, in the third period in particular, I do think the Canucks rallied a bit to shore it up. But they still end up giving the Granlund goal as well, which was an odd one to give up.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's a lot of reaction on the text inbox, and as you would imagine, there's a lot there on Elias Pettersson, how he played tonight. And obviously, I don't think it was anywhere near that you want to see from him, and somebody texted in and said, don't talk about how he had a good shift at the end of the game. That's not the standard. It's not the standard. But once Suter went on that line, I thought that was really the turning point for this Canucks team in the third, because that line came to life, and one of the best shifts they had was on the game-winning goal. Now, yeah. Pettersson was a part of it. He didn't get an assist on it. And again, I'm not saying Pettersson's back or he's close to being back, but those few shifts in the third were some of the best shifts they played, and that last shift was one of the best shifts the Canucks had all game, and it resulted in the game-winning goal.
Should I read that text?
Yeah, go ahead and read it.
This one. All right. You know I love you guys, but before it even starts, please stop any Pettersson showing signs of breaking out nonsense. The guy's a cancer, a dark cloud. The Canucks need to trade him now.
Just quick. Can we stop with this cancer stuff? If people don't know if you haven't had cancer actually touch part of your life, don't throw it out about stupid things like that. Please. I mean, I understand we're passionate, but come on.
He's no better than anything that could get on a trade. I'm sick to my stomach thinking he's wasting the team's money. That's Derek, the disgruntled bus operator, texting in 650-650.
Well, hey, at least he's honest about being disgruntled.
Yes.
You know, I'll take that.
Look, the last shift is the one that really stands out for Pettersson, because there's a clearing attempt or a chip-out attempt by the Sharks, and it's cut off by Elias Pettersson, who keeps it low into the zone, and Garland eventually gets it to Soucy, who takes that shot, and it's Garland again who obviously whips it to Piyu Suter with that one-timer. But Pettersson is part of the zone entry. He's part of the retrieval. He's part of the initial takeaway. You go through that, he was central to a lot. It was not going to wind up getting assist, as many people have pointed out, but many people have texted in that Pettersson was strong and more assertive throughout the back end of that third period.
Yeah, again, I don't think we can sit here and say he's back or a fantastic performance. The fact of the game was a few good shifts late, and two of the goals late that helped the Canucks win happened with that line. Piyu Suter, obviously, a big part of it. And that, especially that last shift, a great finish and a great find by Connor Garland to set him up within a minute, in the last minute of the game, for the Canucks to come away with a victory. All right, we'll get to more of your thoughts on the text inbox as the show goes on here after a 3-2 Canucks win in San Jose. But let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And let's start things off, and let's go to Vancouver, where we have Harry on the line. Harry, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts tonight?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, good, man. What's going on?
Yeah, I just want to talk about maybe a bit of impatience on the coach's part. I know this new change and focus of increasing offense and not having that same, not the same defensive structure, but seemingly they're not the same emphasis on defense. But I'm just wondering, is this all related to the Pettersson change? Because they seem to be just fine the first half of last year. After he signed the contract, they went downhill, like no offense. They're in the playoffs. We all know they didn't have a lot of momentum, but clearly not having a number one player play like number one player makes a difference. Same thing's happening now. Like, I'm just wondering if he's making a bit of impatient changes on lines and with his strategy based upon one player's bad performance. And I would say, like, I don't want to pile on, but you're watching the game today, but, you know, the one thing I've noticed about Pettersson is just that he is, at the end of the game, it's, you know, that even that last play, you're talking about him being involved, but the person who goes to space and wants the puck is Suter, not Pettersson. He seems to just want to go to, like, where he is not going to get the puck. He doesn't want it right now. He's fighting it the whole time. And, that's a separate problem, but I wonder if the coach is just making changes based upon the fact that he doesn't have a number one player, and, you know, if they just play the same system and they actually had a number one player like Pettersson was the first half of the year, they'd be just fine. I know your thoughts.
Just really curious. What changes are you alluding to? Do we lose them?
Yeah.
Changes where? No, sorry.
No, like what coaching changes are you talking about in particular with Elias Pettersson?
Like they're changing the structure. They want a more upbeat, up-tempo team.
Okay, so okay.
Yep. Maybe they've lost some of the defensive prowess there and they're giving more odd rush chances and, you know, all of those things.
Sure.
They didn't have the first half of last year. Now, the only difference is the first half of last year, they had a Pettersson who actually could play. And then the second half of the year, okay, fair enough, it all went down. The playoffs went down. But also, at the same time, they didn't have Pettersson playing like a fourth-line player, let alone first-line player. Like, you know, the play dropped off so much, so you lose that player. Is that enough for someone to want to make a change and say, we need an up-tempo team when you already had a scoring team before versus just one player is playing bad? Like, why should you change your entire system? That's
sure.
What I'm asking.
I was just curious if it meant line changes or style of play. That's a
No.
Yeah,
it's
fair
more,
enough.
More to do with, like, not having one first-line player
yep.
and then changing
right.
your system based on the fact that you don't have that.
All right. Hey, thanks for the phone call, Harry. What's your take on that then?
Again, I don't know if I agree with that. That's impatient. Like, there's an idea behind it over the course of the offseason that they wanted to create more rush chances. That, you know, I don't know if that has so much to do with one player, because they weren't a high rush generation team last year. They were among the lowest. Now, they scored a lot, but as far as chance creation off the rush, they did not generate very much off the rush. And, you know, it's a thing that we've monitored here going into this season of, you know, what was the impetus to want to make that change? Obviously, there's going to be some sort of evolution, but, you know, they really leaned into the bit as far as wanting to be more rush focused. And it hasn't really translated this season. We chatted with Mike Kelly a couple of days ago on Canucks Central, and it's not as if they're creating more off the rush right now, and they're certainly not scoring much off the rush. And that's where, you know, the shooting metrics that we talked about last year, PDO comes into play, and were they scoring too much and on chances that shouldn't go in? And it's obviously regressed so far this year. I don't know how much that's focused on just the one player in Elias Pettersson, as much as it is. It should be a natural evolution for a team that wants to, you know, score more goals come playoff time.
Because yeah.
that was the thing that happened. The game tightened up against Edmonton, and they didn't have enough avenues to create offense.
No, 100%. And obviously, there's tons of reaction on text inbox. C-Legs, he mentions the Canucks need to trade Pettersson. And this one says, this PD situation is starting to feel like being on the Titanic and you guys being the last guys to acknowledge the iceberg. So I see all this stuff, and I mentioned this on the show yesterday on Canucks Central. What do you guys think is going to happen if the Canucks trade Elias Pettersson? Like, who do you think the Canucks are getting if you trade Elias Pettersson right now? If you talk about a one-for-one for one of the best players in the league, sure. I mean, hey, if you want to talk about, you know, Brady Tkachuk or something along those lines, okay, sure. I mean, that can be an interesting conversation hypothetically. I don't know if that trade is out there for the Canucks. So if they're trading Elias Pettersson, they're not getting a first-line center back in return. So do you want them to do a little bit of a mini rebuild, take a step back because you're getting futures and looking long-term? Or are you willing to take players on who are not going to be anywhere near as good as Pettersson's potential, which brings the ceiling of your team down? Whether you like it or not, the Canucks are locked into Pettersson for this season. At the end of the season, okay, who knows? We can have a conversation. The no trade clause kicks in next year. So July 1st, the no trade clause kicks in. So draft, maybe then we can have a conversation depending on how the season goes. But realistically speaking, right now, there's no trade out there. And if there is a trade, unless a magical one-for-one comes up or something along those lines, you get a superstar player back in return, and sure, maybe you can explore that hypothetically, you're not going to be able to make your team a contender if you're trading Pettersson this year. The reality is, the only way the Canucks are going to contend this season is if Pettersson finds his game in Vancouver. If he doesn't after this season, again, maybe there's an existential topic about what to do with him, but I don't think you're being realistic if you think there's a trade to solve that issue this season. A Pettersson trade essentially punts this year. The only way the Canucks are going to win in the playoffs is if they have JT, Pettersson, and Hughes playing at elite levels. Those three players, not to mention everybody else. That's just the reality. You know, and I hate to break to people like that, you know, want to talk about the trade and want to get their frustration out. Go ahead, do it. But realistically speaking, there's no trade out there, guys, especially this early in the season. So, you know, in terms of the iceberg, yeah, sure. I mean, we can see the issue here, but I'm not going to be disingenuous and do a Pettersson trade conversation about the places he could go. It's not real. All it does is just stoke the fires of something that's not realistic, that is nowhere near being realistic right now. That's the harsh reality here.
I think we're more the search and rescue crew that picks up all the, hey, save us from the Pedersen takes. We're sorry. He's good again. Take us out of the water. I think you and I are more the search and rescue crew.
Yeah, and again, when we get to the end of the year, I'm all for going over everything. And if you want to talk about was it a mistake to sign him, should have done something else in the offseason, okay, sure, all those things are fair. But as for
we read your text.
As for where we are right now and where we stand with the commitment that's been made, this is it. That's it, you know, and people say, you know, don't read these text messages, but people call in too. It comes up and we're also responding to what Harry had to say.
Hey,
but
we try to be fair. We try to provide the entire scope of opinions that are coming in from Canucks fans. There are, again, we chatted that there were some good texts. I'll read the good texts here. Pedersen, amazing on that last shift, even though he didn't get a goal. He looked determined, that one coming in. Fuzz from Burnaby, give kudos to EP40 for the work he did on the game-winning goal. So a lot of people disagree with Harry's thoughts as he called in, that he was a decoy on that play. He was certainly, you know, central to a lot of it. Lee Pedersen, very purposeful on that last shift. The other part of the game he was meh again, but on that last shift, was purposeful. So again, we'll read both sides of it.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, and for everybody mentioning, again, if you trade Pedersen now, you're punting on the season. That's the reality. Do you want to punt on the season? Go ahead, but you're essentially punting on the season if you're doing this. And why I say trading, like, yeah, you might get two players who might be better than Pedersen today, but does it raise your ceiling? You win with star players. Do you win in the playoffs if you don't have superstars?
No.
You don't. So, like, if it's not Pedersen, you have to find another superstar. And right now, that magical superstar trade is not realistic. So we'll see how the season goes. Keep your thoughts coming into the text inbox. We'll grab more of your phone calls on the other side as well. You are listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
40 seconds left in the third period. Canucks and Sharks tied at 2. Susie left point, dumps it wide of the net. Suter's after it down low. Gets it to Garland behind the goal. To the near point for Susie. Shoots. Couldn't get it to go. I think Blackwood got a piece of it. Set up front. Suter scores! Hugh Suter with his second of the night on a one-timer in the slot. Set up by Garland out of the left corner. And the Canucks grab the lead back with 25.7 seconds left in the third. It's Vancouver 3 and San Jose 2.
Carson Soucy takes a shot from the point that gets directed into the left corner. And of course, it's Connor Garland going in there, battling it out and making sure that he comes out with it. The San Jose Sharks almost assume that he's just going to throw it back up to the point, but instead he does a full spin and hits P. Suter in the slot, who one-times it. Far side on Blackwood, high glove. He didn't have any chance on it. Just an absolute cannon from the slot.
Canucks win 3-2 over the San Jose Sharks. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. Before we go to the phone boards and we get to more reaction from the Canucks head coach and players, what's happening on the text inbox?
650. Darren in Vancouver, very happy to see a player like Suter have a big game tonight, especially since he doesn't get a whole lot of ice time. Pedersen didn't get any points tonight, but I believe Miller and Besser are also blanked on the score sheet. People are being silly with the Pedersen trade talk, giving up on him too soon. Spare me the trade talk. It goes on. This one, two things can be true. Sat, is this you texting in? This one, Canucks got the win they needed to. Frankly, it shouldn't have been that close. 650. This one, win's a win. You move to the next game. Hopefully coaching staff can take some positives and some negatives and touch those and prepare for the next game. And Hannah says, I thought they looked fine for the most part. They generally looked like the better team, at least. I just don't like the same issues we've been seeing. We're still present against a team who are probably should have been able to play more cleanly against, which is absolutely fair. On what we saw transpire today.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I did like a lot of what I saw from Pugh Suter tonight, and we talked about throughout the season how the secondary scorings really helped this team out. You know, we talked about Kiefer Sherwood, of course, and Teddy Bluger and Heinen. They've been playing really well. They've been getting some contributions down the lineup. And tonight, I thought Suter was terrific up until he got moved up to that line with Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland. And when you get a guy like that going that way, you have to take advantage of the hot hand. And I haven't liked that Rick Tocchet stuck with Baines on that line. But give credit where it's due. He made the switch late and it ended up with two goals. And that's what you want to see. When a guy's rolling and playing well, move him up the lineup. If you feel like you don't have a fixed top six forward group with, you know, the wingers set up for your centers, then ride the hot hand. If you see somebody going, then put that guy up the lineup, and that paid off tonight.
Pugh Suter winds up taking six shot attempts tonight. Obviously, the two goals in 12 minutes and 39 seconds. And you mentioned the deployment. In the first period, gets six shifts for 4 minutes of ice time. Second period, five shifts with 3:23 of ice time. Final frame, eight shifts with 5 minutes and 16 seconds. And obviously the key one with the game-winning goal in a 3-2 Canucks win. You know, the power play continues to see its struggles. No goals tonight, so they extend it to 0-for-12. In their last little run here, is Suter a candidate there for you? Is it a DeBrusk candidate to go back on there, swapping out Garland? Both guys end up scoring tonight. Is there a mini competition all of a sudden for the fifth spot in the power play?
Yeah, I think so. I thought the power play didn't score, but they created some opportunities, at least the look. The first power play they had the two best chances. It was Brock Besser getting a chance and Elias Pettersson with a tip chance off the bumper spot that missed the net, and Besser also missed the net with his shot. But that's kind of the best chances they had. Do you think the power play did enough that you feel like it can stick the way it is?
Not really. Again, there was the one where they got a couple of shots off.
But that's pretty much it.
Hughes was set up for a one-timer. Besser had a one-timer that went wide. And then Pettersson had a bit of a redirect set up by JT, kind of in the mid-slot area. Yeah, I still think they probably need just a more natural goal scorer on there instead of Connor Garland. The thing is, Connor Garland's playing so well right now, it feels harsh to take him out. But it does feel like the power play or the penalty kills are leaving it to Garland to be the one to try to score the goals. And I just don't know if he's a dynamic enough shooter. He can score it in around the net, but when you're left alone, are you going to be able to bury that chance? I just look at DeBrusk, you know, the way he shot that puck is a little bit different than Connor Garland. That's a really strong goal from DeBrusk today. Suter, if he's hot, can you put him in that spot right now? Sprong obviously is a candidate. It's the one spot right now over 12 where Connor Garland maybe isn't thriving.
Yeah,
but everywhere else, like he's been a beast.
No, he has. He's been an absolute beast, and I think his spot is pretty solidified up the lineup. Keep your thoughts coming into text inbox 650-650, but let's go to the phone board 604-280-0650, and let's go to Lethbridge, Alberta, where we have Miles on the line. Miles, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Oh, my pleasure. Love the show, boys. I'm a first time caller.
Rookie lap. Here we go.
Rookie lap. Rookie lap, eh? Just so you know, my position's a goaltender, so that kind of segues me into my first point here. I noticed in the first period and briefly in the second period, the amount of odd man rushes against us, which you guys spoke about a little bit. Not all of them resulted in shots or like scoring opportunities for San Jose, but it did kind of concern me. Like, I'm not an X's and O's guy. I'm in the net. But, you know, I think at times our defense was a little aggressive with the pinches, but also the back checking needs to improve, or just the centerman staying high. So, that kind of concerns me. As far as the power play goes, come on, it's San Jose. You know, yes, the power play was better tonight, but the San Jose team is 3-8-2. Pettersson line, Baines, man, I like the guy, but it's Archdeep Baines. I think we need to keep Suter there. Initially I was thinking Garland, maybe we should shift Garland somewhere else, get some totally new line mates for Petey. But once I saw Suter playing with Garland and Petey, I thought that line was was amazing. Yeah, and I was thinking like Sherwood possibly on that line, but obviously him and Garland play the same position. But I don't know if they play on their off wing or not. But that leads me into my last point, the third line tonight, man. Heinen, Bluger, and Sherwood, I thought they were like unreal. Just so much energy, and I really hope that, you know, Pettersson and the rest of the team really feeds off that energy. But yeah, that's all I have to say. Thanks for having me, boys.
All right, great stuff. Thanks for the phone call. Great first call from Miles and Lethbridge there, Bick.
That's a strong rookie performance.
I like
your build off of it. Your build off that one.
I like it. All right. Keep your thoughts coming in the text inbox. Let's continue on the phone boards. And let's go to Delta, where we have Juggy on the line. Juggy, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Boys, how's it going?
Good, man. What do you have for us tonight, man?
Awesome. Well, first of all, I have to say, like, you know, when this season initially started, I did think we were going to have some growing pains. Obviously, you know, the Demko injury and Joshua. I think Joshua is more important to the team than maybe a lot of people think. But on top of that, I did think, you know, as Tocchet wanted to sort of evolve the team into a rush team, sort of, you know, obviously keeping the structure intact, but, you know, having them sort of find that way to add that, you know, geared to their game. And I go back to when Coach AV was here back in his first year in 06-07, when the team was definitely, you know, they were preaching that defensive sort of side. And it took them, I would say, you know, a season and a bit to really get to that next evolution of that team with the talent that they had. And I feel like, you know, we've got the talent to have those rush things. Obviously, I think we can all agree that the D that definitely needs an upgrade. But, you know, when you sort of look at them and how they're rushing the puck up the ice, you know, obviously it's been very inconsistent. And so I guess maybe the question is, can they feel like they can do this with the D core that they have, or do they feel like they need to tone it down? You know, so that's my first point. The second point is, I refuse, and I absolutely refuse to believe, and I agree with you, Sat, you know, that Pettersson is, you know, the only way that, you know, you could really be a contender. I think once he starts to get his game going, he can be unstoppable. I think that, you know, the issue is, and as you know, I'm in the entertainment industry, you know, I went through something very similar in terms of, you know, and he's going through something similar in terms of, you know, his knee. And he talked about it at the beginning of training camp, which obviously, you know, he's, you know, it doesn't mean that he doesn't have to be better. But, you know, going back to, you know, I had many months actually where I dealt with a diaphragm issue. And that's a huge thing for vocalists. Mm-hmm. And so it was really, really hard to sort of get into gear and sort of realize, okay, what can I do to, you know, take this over, and what can I do to, you know, sort of get through this? And I think Pettersson's finding his way. I will say, I mean, you know, if he can build off tonight, you know, especially those last two shifts there, you know, it'd be great for him and it'd be amazing for the team. You know, and I think that he'll get there. I refuse to believe, and if I'm wrong at the end of the year, I'll take the lumps for it, but I refuse to believe that Pettersson isn't the answer here. Like, I really do think he is. And last but not least, I just wanted to ask you guys, you know, when it comes to Shelofs and Lankinen, thank God for that signing. But when it comes to Shelofs, I think he's a really talented goaltender. And I'm just sort of wondering if he's not better served playing in the AHL, because I think he needs some more reps. I think, you know, last year he got a really good taste of what it's like to be in the playoffs and what it's like to be, you know, the starter for a little bit here. But I do think that he could use some reps down there, and maybe they could call up Patera and see how he does up here. Yeah, just wanted your guys' thoughts on that. I hope you guys have a great night, and happy daylight savings, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Hey, daylight savings. That's right. That's right. I forgot about it. We get an hour tonight. Hey, Juggy, thanks for the phone call. And can't wait to hear you sing the anthems at Canucks games again. It's always great hearing from Juggy, one of the lead vocalists in this market. And, you know, as far as Shelovs, I think he makes a good point. You know, for all this talk about the Canucks carrying three goaltenders when Demko comes back, guys need to play. And I think it's very clear that Shelovs, as much potential as he has, he needs to play. And I don't think he's ready yet for a bigger role. And I think that's obviously something that, you know, is still the, in work here. And the other thing is, I'm not sure when Demko is going to be ready. Would I be surprised if Shelovs gets sent down during a spell to get a game before coming up? Like, they could do that because there's no back-to-back until later this month.
Yeah, because right now, okay, we're 10 games in, right? So we got a very clean representation of what the split is. 30% starters starts right now for Shelovs, right?
Yeah.
It's tough. And Lankinen's playing well, so how are you supposed to, you know, take the crease from him? If it was equal play, you're like, all right, we can platoon and rotate. But he's clearly a step ahead of Shelovs. And it just shows the bar it takes to be a, you know, functioning regular NHL player. And Shelovs is, it's such a pivotal position. It's so high profile when you make a mistake and it hasn't gone perfect for him to begin the year. But yeah, reps are important. It's good mentioned by Juggy on the phone line.
Yeah, great stuff there from Juggy on Shelovs. And yeah, getting some time, whether that's in the minors, would not be a bad thing. We'll see ultimately when Demko comes back or if he gets an assignment here in between. All right, we are going to get back to more of your phone calls and your text messages coming up in just a moment. But we do have the Canucks head coach ready. Here is Rick Tocchet at the podium, presented by Tile Town.
Quite a back and forth game tonight. How does it feel to pull the win out in this one?
Yeah, I thought we played well. You know, it was a good, thought the Sharks played really well too. It was a good up and down hockey game. You know, obviously Pius with a big game for us and Garland with some nice plays. So yeah, it was nice. You know, we didn't crack after they tied the game, so I got to give the guys a lot of credit.
How does it feel to just see Jake DeBrusk grab that first goal, kind of just get that monkey off his back?
Yeah, hell of a shot. I mean, that was dialed. I mean, that's probably the only place he could have scored, and that's a goal scorer's goal, so good for him.
Something you guys wanted to see is a full 60 minutes from your team. Did you feel pretty close to that tonight?
Yeah, I did. I think it was a really good effort, and, you know, it's a good one to win that game. That's some good efforts from some guys, and, you know, got a couple days for the next game.
With that, Kevin Lankinen, obviously, net making some incredible saves. What can you just say about him and his consistency?
He's dialed. You know, he's just dialed in. You know, every game he's played, he's given us a chance to win. You know, he works at his game. That's what I love about him. He's a low maintenance guy, but he's always on the ice working on his game. I love guys that do that.
How do you carry this momentum from this game into the next one against Anaheim?
Well, I thought we did some good things. Our forecheck is probably one of our best forechecks of the year. We had a video on that yesterday because I don't think we were forechecking properly. Still got to worry about there's too many odd man rushes still. We got to, you know, that's something we got to really make accountability, because I think that's my only bone to pick is we're losing F3 there, diving in too much, and not as much as the game before, but not to the level that we want.
For DeBrusk, I know he hadn't scored yet, but just how has he been fitting into this team? I know and what does he bring for you all moving forward?
Yeah, he's a great kid. You know, he wants to do well, mixes in well. It's all the new guys are just great guys. They mix in well with us.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium. From vision to reality, Tile Town has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. So the coach mentioned he thought the Sharks played well. He liked the Canucks game tonight, said they were up and down really well. Didn't crack after the Sharks had tied the game. Thought it was a really good effort, good to win this game. Did mention too many odd man rushes and how they have to make that something that's, they have to be more accountable when it comes to the odd man rushes. Can't be giving up as many of them. Obviously not as many as the Sharks game. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Devils game. But as we mentioned off the top, I mean, obviously the Canucks won, you know, overall solid. You take the points. I'm not sure, honestly, if they played, you know, fully to their identity. The rushes they wanted to eliminate, they really didn't do that as good of a job. But, hey, you get the victory. The coach isn't going to be too upset. But ultimately, those rush chances, they have to clean that up, because against a better team, they'll probably make you pay a lot more, kind of like the Devils did on Wednesday.
Improving doesn't mean it's great. And obviously, based on what we saw on Wednesday against New Jersey, it could only go up. But you give up that much space to even an average team, you're going to get cut open real easy. And, you know, there's some text here that the Sharks gave them their game and there's no easy games in the NHL. Absolutely. But the San Jose Sharks A game is akin to a lot of teams' B game. And, you know, that's why I mentioned that first segment was, is this a case of the Canucks playing down to a competition? Is that a trend we're seeing here in the early part of the season that, you know, we've still yet to see that true out and out 60 minutes. All right. Like they overwhelmed an opponent.
Yeah.
And it's moments like it's a detail like rush opportunities, yeah. How they're giving these up. And it's like a lot of it is very preventable.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and honest, there was a couple that happened. One was off a bad line change in the second period. There was also one off a bad Filip Hronek rush as well. And one time Brännström got caught. So there's been times where the defenseman got caught and also they didn't do a great line change. Those to me, sometimes guys will get caught, but the line changes, we know this team can be a lot better and cleaner in it. Now, it wasn't bad all game. Just a couple of times when that was noticeable more than anything else. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, not a long avail there for Rick Tocchet, but he mentioned Jake DeBrusk. It was nice to see him get his first goal as well. And you really hope for a streaky player that this gets him going.
And Eddie was sending this to us during the game. Eddie, do you want to share your stat finding here?
I can. I need to find the text message. Amongst our conversations. Yes, here we go. I got it. Yeah, Jake DeBrusk is not an October guy. He's a November guy. His October stats, 11 goals and 27 points in 65 games. In November, December, January, February, and into March, all 20-plus goals and games played in a range of between 66 and 77 games. So he definitely elevates his game in November, and he's not an October goal scorer with 11 goals, 27 points in 65 October games.
That's so funny. So there's just a five-month stretch where he just becomes this 20-goal scorer, but
he's no Brian Savage.
Yeah, yeah, it's unreal. So, again, something to keep an eye on over these next 5 months here if Jake DeBrusk starts to turn it around. 11 goals in his career in October in 65 games.
And he's been a guy who's like in that 20-25 goal range,
yeah,
on projected even on years. And those guys are going to go through spells where they don't score a lot, right? So that's why I wasn't too concerned about it. About DeBrusk, it's can he take a bigger step with the Canucks? And that's something you don't determine through the first 10 games. But great for him to finally get his first goal as a Vancouver Canuck. A lot of reaction on text inbox. This one here says, I'm aging myself, but years ago, a certain Red Wing said that Osgood was great, but they felt that Hasek gave him the extra edge. Maybe we need Demko not only for his stops, but the confidence he gives our guys. That's not that Jake and Abby texting in.
Yeah, I mean, having a healthy Thatcher Demko is a great outcome for the Vancouver,
yeah,
Canucks.
But
he can,
like,
he can be up for events. No, like that's the level of talent.
For sure,
we're talking
but,
about
but
here.
I think the point he's making is when you have Demko in, does that give the rest of the group an extra layer of confidence? And I'm not saying it should explain them not being, yeah, at their best this year, but it's fair. Like if you have a guy you obviously, like you mentioned, is a superstar Vezina caliber goaltender, it does give your guys more confidence. I don't care what anybody says. It probably does, right?
But how is it supposed to manifest playing in front of him? Like, what gets created because they have more confidence,
well,
all of a sudden?
Well, for instance, what's happened a few times this year, it's made mistakes that compound, right? Where one guy makes a mistake, another guy makes a mistake, where you're trying to do somebody else's job. Do you feel more comfortable letting the play unfold and you staying to your responsibility and not overcompensating? Because, hey, I feel like my guy's going to make the save. I'll just stay in my spot here.
Doing your job shouldn't impact who's in the crease.
But just do your job. Yeah, but that's easy to say, but not realistic. We've heard even Yannick mention those things.
Right,
like,
but
we don't
confidence shouldn't be drawn from who's playing a net. The confidence should be drawn is I'm a skilled NHL player and I can make plays in this league.
Well, of course, but the point being to the text, it's, yeah, if you have a superstar netminder, it gives the other guys more confidence. I don't think that's you know, wrong.
But these mistakes are things that they shouldn't be doing anyways.
But I don't think it's saying that necessarily. It's just saying, you know, would this team be better, more confident with the puck, for instance, or in their coverage if they had Demko, perhaps? I mean, I don't think it's necessarily wrong. We hear guys say that all the time, right? Because we have seen a lot of guys compensating. Now, I think Lankin has played well enough that I don't think anybody should be concerned. Or that
his run of form here is more than quality.
But a few times you had guys in their own end running around tonight, it opened up space. You know, does that happen with Demko in net? I mean, maybe it still does, right? Like, I mean, it's one of those things. But I understand what not that Jake and Abby is getting at.
Up over, so he came into tonight with a .920 save percentage, which is pretty stunning for this guy who came in and late September signing with no previous experience with the guys and, you know, with the coaching staff. He's been really strong. He's given them more than a third of quality starts here.
Yeah, he's been stellar for him. I thought the rebound control wasn't great for him tonight, but ultimately he made enough stops and big stops to help the Canucks win here tonight. Let's continue on the phone boards. Let's go to 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And let's go to San Francisco, where Aaron, who was at the game, is calling in.
Nice.
Aaron, thanks for calling in. How was it watching your favorite team in San Jose tonight?
You know what? It was a great time. And the first point I got to make is Kiefer Sherwood was the most energetic player on the ice by far, followed up a little bit by Mackenzie Blackwood. He played a great game tonight. But a lot of people are dragging Pettersson, and I get it. I know they want a point a game. They want 2 points a game. They want all that. I don't know if they're not watching properly, but, like, go to a game and see how he plays defensively. See what he does on the penalty kill. See what he actually even brings offensively. And you know, it's a whole thing. You know, I'm happy with the Canucks tonight, and I'm happy what they did.
Yeah, that's great stuff, Aaron. Thanks for the phone call, and call in anytime, man. And I'm glad you had a good time watching your favorite team play. So when we spoke to Mike Kelly on Thursday, Bick, from Sports Logic, he mentioned that Pettersson has been stellar defensively. He said, hey, obviously you're not paying a guy $11.6 million to just be good defensively, and it's okay if you're a good two-way performer, but the offensive side obviously hasn't been there for him. But I think Aaron makes a good point on the defensive side of things. Again, we're not sitting here and saying, just to answer Aaron's, or, you know, to build on Aaron's point, defensively, he has legitimately had a very strong year.
Yeah, he's broken up plenty of plays. He's been in the right spots. The plus minus, I think, is a bit unkind, because there's been a couple of goals where he stepped onto the ice and the goal's been scored immediately. So it's not a true reflection of what's happened. And that happens in a small sample size of just 10 games. But in general, again, it's a thing that, you know, people aren't excited about defense. They just don't get pumped up about, oh, a great interception or a great deflection to poke away a pass. They want to see the points. They want to see the goals, which is fair. And obviously, we haven't heard this, but apparently after the game, Kevin Bieksa in the little round table afterwards after Hockey Night in Canada, this text came in, says Bieksa mentioned post-game that Pettersson's playing very safe, which is fine for a third or fourth liner, yeah, but not your star player. What do you guys think? He looked indecisive on that 3-on-2 where he carried the puck to the goal line before trying the pass. I think that might be a point of frustration for a lot of fans tonight, because there was plenty of opportunity on that play. Could he have hit the trailer? Could he have hit JT early? Could he have just taken the shot himself instead, kind of waited for the better opportunity, if a better opportunity presented itself, and then just wind up kind of putting a hopeful pass out in front of the crease that just kind of deflected away? That was certainly an opportunity where he could have made something a bit more assertive. But then again, we mentioned that final shift where the Suter goal comes from. He's very assertive throughout that. But yeah, he definitely overweighted on that one rush before the DeBrusk goal.
Yeah, I thought so as well. And he's obviously not playing with this level of confidence you want to see yet. And it's the same story, right? Now, somebody was texting in and said, you know, you guys, say me specifically, I don't want to lump you into it. You know, you go at fan, you don't like the fans that have these, you know, trade suggestions. Like,
right,
how about being constructive? You know, don't be condescending. It's like, I'm just trying to answer the questions, man. And we get a lot of people saying the same thing, yelling at us as well. I'm literally getting yelled at every single postgame show.
I'll illustrate this point, okay? So there's people that are like, again, not fans of Pettersson's game, which is like, hey, like, that
completely fine.
Send in your takes, absolutely, right? We appreciate that. This one, so clearly this is someone that's not a fan of Elias Pettersson, who's spelled his name, by the way, Patterson. Well, what about a trade with Chicago for Connor Bedard? So you don't think he's very good, but you think you can acquire Connor Bedard?
It's just answering the question. Again, I'm not trying to be condescending to anybody. Honestly, I'm not. Well, sometimes maybe it comes off that way. That's not what I'm intending to do, so I apologize.
Yeah,
but
Connor Bedard on an entry-level deal, First overall pick, that's worth at least 4 first rounders.
Well, and
I'm being kind. I've tried to get an answer from an exec before of, hey, like, what would it take to trade for the first overall pick? And the answer I got is essentially like the value of 8-9 first rounders.
Yeah.
Good luck. Like, such is the market of how NHL GMs view this stuff. That's why trades like the Eichel thing are so, like, mind-blowing, because, like, wow, you really traded out certainty. Like, that's what you felt doing.
Yeah, and look at where Buffalo is. They haven't been able to replace
him. And it required a medical disagreement,
yeah,
of, like, what are we going to do with this player's body, and the player feels differently than the team. That's the scale of what we're talking about here. So I don't know what you want us to do when you text in submissions like, well, he's terrible, but also let's go trade for Connor Bedard.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, so somebody will text in and say, you know, call us names, and then say the Canucks should trade him for Jack Eichel or something. It's like, I mean, you're calling me an idiot, and you're saying here they're going to trade him for Jack. It's not realistic. You know, that's the point of that I'm trying to make here more than anything else. As far as constructive ways to get Pettersson going, I mean, we've all I don't know what else there is to say, right? Like, the coach has talked about better practice habits. We talked about that, be better in practice. We've spoken about changing line mates up. Okay, he was struggling early on with Jake DeBrusque and with Daniel Sprong. Well, playing with Hoglander and Garland, they were going, right? He goes with those guys, have a couple good games. Now it doesn't work. Steve Baines is there. It's not working. We said, hey, maybe move him off that line.
I'd really like to see Sprong back there.
Yeah, for sure. I don't mind seeing that either. But I don't know if there's, as far as like what we can say to get Pettersson going or ideas, I think we're beyond that point. I think we're at the point now, which I understand creates more frustration because nobody has an answer to it. It's like the coach said, like, he has to find that confidence within himself. There's nothing that we can suggest or that the coach can suggest or the coach can do to get him out of it. It just has to happen organically at some point. And the reality is, with the Pettersson situation, unless somebody comes and offers you Connor Bedard, right, or something along those lines, and hey, maybe somebody does. And if that's the case, sure, then I'll be happily proven wrong that there was a superstar for superstar trade available. But I think, honestly, the only thing you can do with Pettersson this year, as much as, you know, it's hard to take, you got to ride it out. You just got to ride through the year, you know, and you're allowed to criticize and critique his play, have any suggestions you want, but that's just the reality where they find themselves.
There are a couple of thoughts coming in. OP from Fleetwood says, what about putting the Lotto line back together? Get that sure. confidence.
Like I said, like I'm fine with all these things. Like, I'm, you know, because of the way Pettersson's played, there's no bad suggestion as far as where to play him and what to try. We last time he had trouble going. We mentioned this last during the show last week, Bick, that what did Boudreau do? He put him on the wing, and that's kind of how he found his game again. And eventually he got going, and then next thing you know, he's back playing down the middle, and his game was rediscovered. Is that maybe a better way of doing things? I don't mind. I think as much as him and Garland had some moments, I do think there's some clashing now as far as their styles go to some extent a little bit as far as Pettersson is concerned. But I thought Suter coming in allowed them to have a three-way passing game, and I think having that outlet, I think, mm-hmm. made things a little bit better for him. I just think you need to have skill around him. I don't think you can have a guy like Baines or somebody who's more of a plugger at this point as far as going in and trying to only forecheck. I think you need guys that can connect plays with them to get him going.
650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one. Yes, they won, but this definitely wasn't redemption after that loss. That one's coming in from Vic. Actually, you know, I wanted to say something as well about the call that we just got from San Francisco from Aaron about Kiefer Sherwood, because there is a lot of love as well for Kiefer Sherwood mm-hmm. coming to the inbox. He had that one shift where I think it was Granlund where he knocked him down twice, and you know, he was on his way back up, and Sherwood pushed him down again. Paul Quillam. I'm really looking forward to seeing this team when Sherwood and a back-to-form Joshua are playing. I suspect they'll feed off each other's energy and create considerable havoc for opposing teams. So it's always fun to check in on Kiefer Sherwood on the hit chart. He ends up chalking up 5 tonight, so a lighter night for him, but it's still another 5 hits for Kiefer Sherwood as he continues his ascent, going right for what feels like the record right now at this pace. He is on a more than record pace to head towards the hit record against his friend Jeremy Lauzon.
This guy takes the kill and penalty kill literally. Like, really, that shift he had, just bowling guys over, just absolutely crushing anybody in sight. And then the thing, it's not just about being physical. He makes plays on the puck. He mm-hmm. gets pucks out. He makes the right play. I hate guys that just chase hits. Like, I want somebody to make a hit for a purpose. Separate man from the puck and make sure I don't want a guy that throws hits and takes himself out of the play. Like, I want a guy to be physical but do it the right way. And Sherwood does that consistently, and he's been a tremendous addition to this team, even on the PK.
Plus, he had a one-timer in the second period. Where
great pass from Bluger. And I know Myers gets a lot of guff. He made a great play at the blue line to keep that puck in, and then Bluger made a great play. But a fantastic save from Mackenzie Blackwood, who seems to have a lot of good games against the Canucks. Like, anecdotally, like, it seems like every time they play him, he has a good game. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll take more of your text messages and more of your phone calls on the other side as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on after a 3-2 Canucks victory over the Sharks in San Jose. And the postgame show is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And he'll bank it out to center ice. Now here's a chance again. Brock Besser in alone on a breakaway. He hit the goalpost as the Canucks pounced on a turnover to the Sharks' blue line. Besser deked to his forehand before wiring it glove side past Blackwood. And here they come again. Jake DeBrus scores. He's got his first as a Canuck. He beats Blackwood from the left circle as Vancouver entered the zone again. Quinn Hughes sets him up, and it's 2-1 Canucks with 4:22 left in the third.
Brock Besser hits the post. The puck ends up coming back out of the zone, but the Canucks do a good job of transitioning quickly from the red line back to JT Miller at the blue line, who gives it to Quinn Hughes, finds DeBrus streaking down the slot.
Yeah, hell of a shot. I mean, that was dialed. I mean, that's probably the only place he could have scored, and that's a goal scorer's goal, so good for him.
Jake DeBrus helping the Canucks tonight. They go on to win 3-2 over the Sharks in San Jose. Pew Suter, two goals and the game-winning goal. Got it within the last minute of the game to give the Canucks a victory over the Sharks. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Big Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Canucks improved to 5-2-3 on the campaign, now have 13 points on the year, which is good for third in the division in points. But as far as point percentage goes, they're second in the division right now.
Look at that.
So point percentage is what you should be looking at early in the season, especially when teams are not playing the same amount of games so far. For all intents and purposes, the Canucks have won 5 games and they lost 5 games. But 3 of the games they've lost, they picked up points in, and that's allowed them to be 3 points above 500 10 games in, which is a more than fine spot to be in, especially as you're still working your game out and trying to become better as a team. And the Canucks have a lot of room for improvement still. But at the very least, through the first 10 games, Bick, they don't have a hole to dig out of as far as the standings are concerned.
No, not at all. And, you know, the November 1st stat is one that always gets cited. The American Thanksgiving is another one.
And the Canucks are a playoff team come November 1st.
Yeah, they're in those positions where they can have success moving
November,
forward.
November 2nd, Canucks are third in division based on points, and they're above the line for the wild card. And
well, the stat is be within four.
I'm just saying,
of the playoff
line.
But if you are
in a playoff spot, usually it's about 80%. Again, doesn't mean they're going to make it. It just means the Canucks haven't put themselves in a hole yet. And considering how poor the performance was against the Devils, the most important thing was get the victory, try to get your game closer. Again, I did not love how they played overall, especially when you consider how they played against the Devils. I thought they gave up too many rush chances, but it was a better effort. Yeah. They got the victory, and there was enough here to work with, to improve on, because they weren't going to go from that performance against the Devils to, like, we're a 10 out of 10.
Stanley Cup Game 7 type performance.
Do you get closer to it, and then hopefully as this road trip goes on, you get closer to your top game.
This was an entirely forgettable performance that in January we're like, hey, what happened in that Sharks game? It was one of those type of games that if they didn't just come off that 6-0 drubbing, it wouldn't have been as much of a focus. But you know, look, they get the 2 points. It was better than Wednesday, although that was not a huge bar for them to cross. But as you mentioned, 13 points here in 10 games with the second best points percentage so far in the division.
Now, before we go to the phone boards, Bick, what is being said on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox? 650-650.
Jay in Vancouver eked out a win. Never mind playing a full 60. They need to put it together a full 20. This one, our Lord and Savior, Shark Killer, Pew Suter, gets a goal. You know, he and Connor Garland love playing against the San Jose Sharks. Connor Garland, 23 points now in 25 career games. That's the team he has scored the most against, which is always telling because he's a big Shark fan as well. So I guess he's eager to play in these games. Pew Suter, obviously, you know, he's got the most goals against San Jose as well in his career. So those guys love going up against San Jose. 650-650. Kirk and Kuhlman, no easy games in this league. 2 points, great, but the Canucks were average. And Jesse from Bear Mountain in Halifax, staying up late. Connor Garland playing like a future Ring of Honor inductee.
I mean, he's getting his name chanted. His effort's been top-notch. He's productive. He's been good defensively. What is there to criticize about Connor Garland right now? Really? There really isn't, right? Marty, the realtor, texts in and says, the criticism of Pettersson is very similar to the criticism of the Sedins in their early years. And last time I checked, we were running JT Miller out of town after his big deal was signed. Now we have two twins in the rafters, and we are chanting JT's name at almost every game. Vancouver needs to do what Vancouver does best. 420 it and chill. That's at Marty, the realtor, texting in. So that's the message from Marty, the realtor. All right, we'll get to more of your texts here in a little bit, but let's go to the phone boards and let's start things off in Surrey, where we have Nathan on the line. Nathan, what's going on, man? What do you have for us tonight?
Hello?
Yes, what's going on, buddy?
You guys got me?
We got you.
How are we doing, boys? How are we doing tonight?
We're doing great, man. How are you?
I'm quite well. I'm quite well, boys, here. You know, I'm just out in Langley here tonight, a little bit far away from the Surrey boys, but you know how it goes. We got to watch the game with the homies. Hughes, the shooter, with an absolute clutch performance, boys. Two goals in 12 minutes of ice time. He hasn't missed a beat since his game winner in round one. Send him to line two, boys, and send Petey down to the fourth line. Kidding. But for real, boys. I mean, this win was okay, but against the worst team in the league, I mean, I don't know, boys. Why did both teams seem like they were on the same sheet of ice tonight, boys? Like, it was even. I feel like everybody needs to check themselves and give it they're all for a 16-minute effort, or otherwise we're going to be losing games against better teams here, boys. Now, guys, I have some stats for you. Guess who has 6 goals in 10 games for the Ottawa Senators and is making league minimum? It's the hockey god, Adam Gaudette, former Canuck. Guess who's making 11-6 and still hasn't changed out of his Halloween costume as a ghost yet? All I can say is a one-for-one would be opening up a lot of cap space, fellas. Send Petey to the moon. Good night, fellas.
Thanks for the phone call. That is Nathan calling in. Adam Gaudette, who's been absolutely red hot for the Ottawa Senators, up to 6 goals now in the campaign so far. Yeah, so he's off to a red hot.
He's having a Cy Young start so far. 6 goals, 1 assist.
Yeah, and good for him, honestly. It's always good to see somebody kind of try to reclaim a spot in the National Hockey League there. So,
But at least the satire ones were like, all right. Well done. Yeah. Unless Nathan's serious about that one. But again, that felt like satire, which is funny.
Yeah. No, I know. It was good. Did you see some of the texts? Some people were texting in about the Halloween costumes for Canucks players. Did you see that?
Zoinks! Yeah. I was kind of curious if how many Zoinks and Shaggy references we can make with Elias Pettersson.
So Pettersson was Shaggy.
Yeah.
And Hughes was Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And I'm bad with the rest of the names, but yeah, Besser was
Velma, Daphne, and Fred.
Yeah, I think so. Something along those
is
lines.
Is it Fred? I just made that up.
No, I'm not 100%. Yeah, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, JT Miller obviously probably stole the show with his costume, like he usually does. Him and his wife did a really good Austin Powers. Was it Fred? Yeah, good job. Good job. Yeah, so it was good. All right.
Yeah, JT went as the Fembot.
Fembot. And his wife was Austin Powers.
Yeah. You know what I just discovered? I just Googled it. Shaggy's first name is actually called Norville.
Norville?
Shaggy's the
nickname?
The nickname.
Well,
Norville Rogers.
Norville Rogers. That's the official name.
Norville.
Right, so Pettersson was Norville.
Yeah.
There we go.
He's Nowhereville right now.
Jeez. You know what? What was going through my head is like he's Shaggy. They're chasing ghosts. Like, oh, they're looking for. Anyway, so we'll just leave it at that. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. Let's go back to the phone board 604-280-0650. And let's go to New West where we have Sean on the line. Sean, thanks for hanging in there, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight? Sean. All right, put Sean back on hold. We'll see if we can get him back here coming up in a second. Let's go to Langley, where we have Lee on the line. Lee, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good, man. What do you have for us tonight?
Yeah, I just want to continue what Nathan said about Suda. Like, he is so reliable. He could literally play anywhere. Fourth line center last year, first line center, winger, second line winger. Like, he could probably play as our third pair defenseman, honestly. He is so reliable. And the moment he went on to Garland and Petey's line, that line suddenly just had a spark to it. Like, I don't know what else I could say about Suter. He's been just so reliable. As for Petey, I texted earlier, actually, saying on that last shift he had purpose, but I thought the other parts of his game, he was very meh. And that's what frustrates me about Pettersson. Like, I feel like there are some things that I like to see. Like, there are some things from Petey that I actually like. And then he follows it up with, like, two bad things immediately after. Like, I think there was one shift where he moved to the – he got the puck at the point. And, like, he just flings a muffin and it leads to a block shot. And I think it led to a breakaway chance for the Sharks. And it's like, I feel like when he has the puck, he either gets rid of it too quickly when he should hold on to the puck. And then when he needs to make a pass or a shot, he just holds on to it for too long. But yeah, that's all I have to say about Pettersson. I think he will get out of it. He's just too good of a player not to. That's what I truly believe. And as for one more point, since we were talking about Halloween costumes, have you guys seen Roenick's Batman costume? That is one of the worst Batman costumes I've ever seen. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for the phone call, Lee. I haven't seen that one yet.
I don't spend a lot of time on Instagram.
No, I haven't checked it. I just saw stuff that popped up on Twitter that fans kind of were posting about. I have not seen the Roenick one yet, but I'm sure it'll come to our attention coming up in a little bit. The point that Lee makes about Pettersson's shot selection, it's true. I mean, he had a few shots tonight that I thought, not so much about being weak, just ill-timed, and a couple got blocked and went the other way.
I just brought up the Roenick one.
Is he wearing hockey pads? Is it like the Batman one?
No, honestly, he should have just done that. That is a rough scene.
It's not good? All right.
All right.
I haven't seen that one yet, but yeah.
Shout out to his partner going with Poison Ivy, which is pretty on point, but yeah. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to distract you there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was just saying on Pettersson getting shots blocked, the point that Lee was making, some of his shots from the point or some of his shots aren't getting through and it led to a couple chances going the other way. And I think that it's a good point. I mean, we've seen that indecisiveness when he has the puck, not always making the right play with his shot. And that's something obviously that he's still working on and trying to do a lot better and needs to do a lot better from as well. Erica McCortlum says the power play was a bit better because we actually took some shots. We still needs a lot of work. Overall, game was still underwhelming, and we only got going the last 10 minutes. I think the Canucks just need to take shots. Happy DeBrusk got his first goal, though. That is Erica from McCortlum.
Well, the first power play was the one that looked better. It was off the Gushkin penalty. There was the Hughes one-timer taking a pass from Pettersson. JT had the hard pass into the middle on a redirect. Heinen misses the net on a chance too, and it kind of kickstarted a 2-on-1 for Granlund the other way, and it eventually, you know, Miller takes the penalty to get them off the power play. But the second power play didn't really do much. They kind of have an unsettled play along the top where, you know, Miller and Hughes were trying to interchange it, and Miller gets put onto the other flank, and he does get a pass to Besser into the bumper, but that was really about it on that second one. The first one, again, showed some encouraging signs, but nothing that felt like it was overly threatening, and it's now 0-for-12 run here for the Canucks. And tonight they end up taking two shots on goal on the man advantage.
Yeah, not enough.
Yeah.
I mean, both those shots end up missing. And I think the two shots were the Besser one that missed and the Pettersson tip, right? I can't think of any other.
It was the Hughes and the Pettersson ones.
That
one,
yeah.
That's, again, not really enough. You do judge it on chances and, you know, can you get three good chances? But in general, not really enough.
For sure. Rafe texts in and says, you guys are tripping. This was a superior effort to any of the last five games. The forechecks were way closer to what the standard is. The forwards and D were way more on the same page in terms of outlets and puck support. And for the most part, the mistakes that were made were with an aggressive attitude and effort to make plays. These shortfallings are correctable. Plus, the Sharks are not going to be a bottom feeder this season. That is Rafe, who thinks we're not giving enough credit to how the Canucks played tonight.
Well, the Sharks right now are 3-8-2.
Yeah, I know. They've won three in a row, though.
That feels bottom feedery to me.
Yeah, no, I know. They've won three in a row. They played a lot better. They lost the first nine games of the season. Now
they're literally in last place. They're 32nd. No, that's bottom feeder.
Fair. And, I mean, I think the point Rafe makes, and the coach said the same thing, he liked their forecheck tonight, and there was a lot of things they did well, but the big thing they've been pointing towards is rush chances. And even Talkett himself said, to me, the thing I was looking at more than anything were the rush chances and some of your rotations. And they had some really bad rotations, and they had some bad rush chances against. And if those had gone in, we could be sitting here and talking about a completely different night because the Canucks did not generate anywhere near the rush chances that the San Jose Sharks did. So all fair, but it's one of those things.
I do think there's elements of both sides maybe making the same point here and a correct point. Because if you wanted to just look at territorially, how did the Canucks play? And we mentioned this after the first period that they had, you know, over 5 minutes in the offensive zone with the puck, and it was spent 9 minutes in the Sharks' end in the first period in general, regardless of who had possession. Well, that carried over throughout the entire game. The Canucks end up with just shy of 16 minutes of zone time, possession in the offensive zone. Overall, the puck was in the Sharks zone just shy of 28 minutes, 27 minutes and 53 seconds. So nearly half the game was played in the Sharks' end, which is an awesome number compared to just 22, 43 seconds in the Canucks' end. So territorially, hey, a lot of positive things for Vancouver, but you alluded to it. It's the rush chances. Where did San Jose get their opportunities in limited ice time in 11 minutes and 28 seconds in the Canucks' end? It was rush opportunities. And they left some goals on the board. Certainly, a lot more chances were there. Like, Grundstrom had a 3-on-1 after Hoglander and Hughes have a bit of a mix-up in the offensive zone. He just takes a shot high, and it's dealt with. They could have created far more out of that chance. They had a 4-on-2, 4-on-3, where Gratlin gets real tight and Lankin is out there to challenge him. That could have been a bigger play. Obviously, the breakaway that we've mentioned that Eklund had. You know, that's a huge play that Lankin bails them out on. Hronek pinches up, and Wenberg essentially skates into DeBrusk's space, who's covering for Hronek, and manages to make a play that kickstarts a chance the other way. Like, there was plenty of rush opportunities for San Jose, and those are just the ones on the top of my head. I might be missing one or two more.
I think that chance Will Smith had from Goudreau wasn't quite off the rush, but that was a really good chance too. And then obviously at the very end of the game, Zetterlund in alone with 2 seconds to go and whiffs on the shot that could have scored. Again, fine margins. The Canucks won the game positive. There's a lot of correctable things. I do agree. Everything here is correctable. We'll get to more of your reaction on the other side. Plus, we'll hear from Ian McIntyre as the Canucks Central postgame show continues, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Call them today at DLEAMC.com. More next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central post-game show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Cycles it around the end boards again. Cardwell deflects it behind the goal for Zetterlund. Out the left wing side to Wallman, left circle. One-timer stopped by Lankin, and he made a great save on Cardwell on the rebound. Another puck thrown to the net by Wenberg. That stays out too, and the Canucks clear the puck to the near corner. Now back to the line. Jan Ruda with a drive. Couldn't get it through on net. Cardwell tries a centering pass. Broken up by Soucy. He tips it to the far corner. Garland is hit from behind. Hard into the boards by Zetterlund. The play continues. Ruda right point. Shot right on. Stopped by Lankin. Kick the rebound to the far wall, and Pettersson gets it off the glass and out to center.
Canucks win 3-2 over the Sharks on the road, starting a three-game road trip with a victory, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to your phone calls coming up in just a moment as well, and we are going to get to Ian McIntyre. Plus, we're going to hear from Jake DeBrusk, who scored his first goal as a Canuck tonight in Game 10. Finally get that monkey off his back. A big one for him here tonight. But before we get to some text messages and Jake DeBrusk, let's go to the phone boards and let's go to Vancouver where we have Reynolds on the line. Reynolds been hanging on for a while. Oh, we lost Reynolds? All right. Unfortunately,
gotta compete. All right. Gotta compete.
He just would have hung in there a little bit longer, would have got him on. But there it goes. Before we get there, on the text inbox, 650-650, this one here says, hope this one makes the air. Thanks for shutting down the cancer reference. I lost my parent last year, and with all the Terry Fox and BC Cancer Fundraiser, humanity continues to be behind the eight ball. Two, take no solace in beating San Jose. Canucks surely barely got two points. I'm sick of hearing a Demko EP40 updates. EP40 one shot tonight, fifth highest paid player out of 736 players in the league. Need more from Elias Pettersson. I think that's obvious. I mean, need more from him. What else are you seeing on the text inbox?
650-650. Billy in Port Moody, kind of a different thought here. Hey, guys, great show. I was just wondering what you think the draw power of Quinn Hughes is while he's on the road. I know he's not on the echelon of Connor McDavid, but curious where you think he would tier Billy in Port Moody as far as the Q rating for Quinn Hughes. I think the list of and I'm talking for the average sports fan, not the average hockey fan, because the list would for the average hockey fan would be a lot deeper. But the list of what's going to draw the average sports fan to a rink, I think the list is really, really short. I think it's like McDavid, McKinnon, Matthews.
McCarr.
And then I think maybe Crosby, Ovechkin still, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Because those are just mainstays.
With Matthews in American City, it's probably Matthews.
Yeah. I don't think Barkov is doing it. I don't think Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah, Matthew Tkachuk is a star. I'm not sure he's somebody that...
You know what? I'll throw Tkachuk in there.
What about Kucherov, the Tampa Bay Lightning in general, because of how exciting they've been, perhaps? The Rangers of Panarin?
I don't know.
Like, you're right, though. I think the list is not longer than 10.
Again, like, the average hockey fan would probably be thrilled to go watch Sebastian Aho play.
But a casual fan.
A casual sports fan.
You know who's actually entering that to me, but hasn't got the attention, is Kirill Kaprizov.
Yeah.
Like, he's a super fun player to watch. I'm not sure he gets that type of attention, though, right?
Again, like, this is not a reflection of those players' ability. It's just a reflection of like what's marketable and what's drawing people, the average sports fan, to the rink. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, because we're in the hockey echo chamber, and you know, the casual Canucks fan might be watching, you know, a Detroit Red Wings game and pumped up to watch a Dylan Larkin play. Is the average sports fan checking out that same game? I don't know if that's as true. But again, there's some guys that might pop, and you know, you hope like someone like exciting, like a Matt Barzell, who's, you know, such a fast skater. And is that someone that people want to go see? I don't know how much the average sports fan is drawing in for that.
No, I'm with you on that. I think it's one of those things.
To Billy's point, I think he's maybe in that second or third tier. Have another strong season, and suddenly, you know, does it raise the profile even more?
For sure. Pardeep texts in and says, if only Lindholm wasn't dead set on being a number one center and Zadorov wasn't dead set on whatever kept him from signing in Vancouver. Camaraderie takes time, but do you gentlemen believe the Canucks would have been better off overpaying for tried, tested, and true, as in paying what it would have took to keep Lindholm and Zadorov? I mean, I was on record as saying I didn't love giving Zadorov $5 million at the time. And even so far, he's playing like 18 minutes a game. Like, I'm paying a guy $5 million. You want to play like 20 minutes. Like, he's number four. He's playing more as a, you know, like 4-5 tweener type. That's a lot to pay. And especially if it's 6 years, I'm not sure I love that. So I'm not going to go back and say, just give him the money. Maybe Lindholm's the one you could talk me into, because I didn't mind the 7x7 offer. And it wasn't that far off signing him, right?
But even he went like 7 games without a point.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, are we sure that those guys here necessarily change things dramatically? I think on the back end, having Zadorov helps. Is it worth the money that you've allocated? It's fair, though, saying you're paying $3.5 million to Forsberg and Desharnais. Would you rather not just pay an extra 1.5? Fair point. You know, but those guys obviously don't have contracts beyond 1 year for Forsberg and 2 years for Desharnais. So the flexibility is there at the very least. I'm still early for me to say that. The Lindholm one is, to me, the one that, especially considering how hard it is to find guys that can play the way he did in the playoffs and have that depth and versatility. And the best they could do when they lost him was signing DeBrusk, who's got his first goal tonight. We're going to hear from him in a second. Mm-hmm. I think Lindholm is a higher quality player than DeBrusk. I think the Canucks were better with Lindholm than DeBrusk. So that's the one I probably talked me into a bit more. I would have rather had, but you know, we'll see how it plays out. We're still only 10 games into the season.
650. This one, look how Boston is doing as well.
Yeah, they're not doing great.
They won tonight to get a little bit below 500, but yeah, it hasn't gone great for Boston either. 11 points in 12 games, but they are a dash 10 in the goal differential column. Canucks sitting at dash 3, which isn't fantastic in their own right, but nevertheless, the Bruins have had significant struggles to begin the season.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get some of your text messages here, but we mentioned the guy who scored a goal tonight, Jake DeBrusk, finally getting his first as a Vancouver Canuck. And yeah, the Bruins are not doing as well as the Canucks are. So maybe even though he hasn't scored goals, he's got to feel better about being here than in Boston so far. And here is Jake DeBrusk after the game.
Jake, let's talk about it. November 2nd last year, first goal of the season. It's November 2nd today, first goal of the season. Is there something special about this day?
Well, it's Phil Hronek's birthday, I guess. I actually saw that before the game, actually. I don't really know where, but I saw that was the same day, and I was like, well, let's see if it's today. So it was nice that it worked out that way. But yeah, I guess it's hopefully I can get a couple more earlier next year so that I know I have a automatic one on the second.
How'd it feel to just get that monkey off your back?
Yeah, it felt great. Obviously, it's hard not to fixate on it. It's hard not to focus on it. It's one of those things where there's so many different things and new things that kind of come with being on a new team and just kind of getting used to everything. And, you know, I think I'm getting a little more comfortable, but at the same point, every game that goes by, you just kind of feel it more and more. And you always want to get the first one as fast as possible. So it took me a lot longer than other guys, but, you know, I'm happy to help in a win.
On the other side of that, just the team's performance in this one, your thoughts on it in such a close game?
Yeah, I thought that we were actually pretty good for the majority of the game. I liked our game. I thought we were in control. You know, it was one of those things where we had lots of ozone time, you know, low to highs, things of that nature where pucks were getting through and a couple almost. But in saying that at the end, I think they had a push as well. I think they had some good kills and the power play kind of gained some momentum. So it was one of those things where obviously we kind of had them at bay until the last minute there, and then it was kind of crazy. So it was a great play by Garley to give it to Suits there. And he loves playing in San Jose, so I knew it was going in.
Yeah, can you speak on Suits at all and just two goals from tonight and the game winner, of course?
Yeah, we were talking about before the game, actually, because he was saying that he looks at player stats. Long story short, he pretty much said he had their number. So I was looking out for it tonight, and when he got the first one, he was staring at me coming through the line. And then I got one, so then we kind of called it, and then the second one. But he's been playing great. Well-rounded game, obviously. Comes as advertised and someone that you can kind of plug in anywhere. And to see him, you know, bury that, we need everybody, and that was a prime example of it.
How do you carry this momentum into the next game against Anaheim?
Yeah, obviously just, you know, I think we have a similar start as we did tonight, and just kind of keep playing our game. Obviously, it's nice to get back in the win column, obviously, after the New Jersey game. So anytime you win one, you want to get another one, and just kind of keep it rolling. So I think we have a couple of days in between, so a couple good practices and right back at it.
That is Jake DeBrusque after the game, a 3-2 victory by the Vancouver Canucks, and finally got his first goal. And, you know,
sounds cheery.
Yeah, and he was giving credit to Filip Hronek. He's saying Filip Hronek, it's his birthday, and that's why he scored a goal tonight. So the credit goes to him.
Hey, whatever reason you need to score a goal, he found his. He found his. Is that the cue for Elias Pettersson to just look for birthdays and milestones and say, all right, I'm going to do it because it's this guy's birthday today. But nevertheless, again, it's good for DeBrusque to get his first of the year. Winds up playing 14:35 and 3 shot attempts tonight. So, again, you know, still trying to get the shot off. But, you know, that seems like some low minutes for him right now because he has peaked at around, I think, 17-18 this year. He played 18:44 in the first game, played 17-16 a couple of games ago. But yeah, that's a couple of games in a row, hovering around 14 for Jake DeBrusque. So need to get him going and get back up to that 16-minute mark.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Jake DeBrusque tonight got the goal. And as far as him playing with JT Miller and Brock Besser tonight, I know they were on the ice for the tying goal, the 2-2 goal before the Canucks, you know, got the game winner a bit later on in the game. But I thought the JT Miller, DeBrusque, and Garland line, I mean, Besser line, was the Canucks' most consistent line. And if you look at the metrics for that line tonight, they controlled almost 89% of the shots 5-on-5. That's pretty good.
Huge.
You know, so they were very much spending the majority of their time in the offensive zone tonight as a line, and a big reason why the Canucks did end up winning this game.
If, you know, we were just chatting about changes, and you know, obviously you'd expect Baines to come out of the top six.
Yeah,
and
with Dakota Joshua coming back.
Yeah, and Joshua coming back. You know, is that trio, that Miller, Besser, DeBrusque one, that you want to stick together, or is it room for a lot of changes across the lineup right now? Because I'm not even sure if the, you know, Sherwood, Bluger, Heinen line has to stick together right now. If Joshua comes back, you know, you could move Heinen away from that line. And does Joshua go in the top six? I feel like that's a little too much too soon for Joshua. But nevertheless, it just feels like you're going to have a lot of options when Joshua returns in the lineup.
Honestly, so when Joshua comes back, you have a few options here, right? And somebody just texted in. I was just about to say, why don't they try Heinen at center? If you don't want to call somebody up, would you think about having Suter play with Pettersson up the line, have Heinen move down to the middle and put Joshua with Bluger and Sherwood and then you have a real crash and bang third line. Like, you have some options because Heinen can play center. Like, so when you bring Joshua back, I think you can do a few different creative things, and we'll see what happens with Niels Ullmann, of course, who got sent down. But yeah, Joshua is getting close to return. I'd imagine Baines is coming out. But yeah, maybe they do some other couple of tweaks. Because I do agree. I'm not sure you want to put Joshua straight out of the lineup into you know, a premium spot right away. You want to kind of ease him in a little bit, and maybe that's one way to do it.
Yeah, you know, for me, the Joshua mark is just going to be, it feels like Baines is the one most likely to come out of the lineup with Joshua coming back. It's 11 minutes and 35 seconds today for RHD Baines, so no shot attempts. That was the other thing, you know, just trying to create some urgency and some scoring opportunities on that line. So if he's the one that comes out, who's the one that's going up the lineup?
Yeah.
And, you know, Sprong could be a candidate, 10:38 tonight, but again, takes a couple of shots. And, you know, he hasn't had any defensive issues the last handful of games that he's played. So is that an encouraging sign that you can get back into a top six spot here? Or is it Hoglander? I don't know. It feels like they've got some short-term options to sort through.
Yeah, and we'll see ultimately how it goes for the next game coming up on Tuesday. But before that, let's welcome in the man we call the closer and the triple threat. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
I'm not sure about Danton Heinen playing center.
I have my doubts as well.
He's only played like 200 games down the middle in the NHL before. So, I mean, he can play center.
Yeah. Well, he took 31 faceoffs last year, so he hasn't played center in at least 2 years, Zach. But maybe it's an option. I mean, you always want versatility. And the reason you want it is because on a night like tonight, where you see how good Pew Suter looks on wing, playing in the top six, you start to think about, well, how can they make that happen? Like, if you wanted to start next game, Suter on left wing with Garland and Pettersson, because they were great in their few shifts together in the third period, it leaves you a problem on the fourth line, especially since Niels Ullmann is on waivers.
Yeah, it feels like Ratu would be the next one.
But if Ratu comes up, that means, so if Joshua comes in for Baines and Ratu comes up, that means one of Sprong or Hoglander has to come out, right? To bring Ratu in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, and Ratu, I guess he's by all accounts been really good in the American Hockey League, as he was for most of last season, especially at the end of last season. I wonder if ideally they'd rather give him a little more time, like rather than putting him into a fourth line role here, giving him all that, all those minutes and all that responsibility at the AHL level. But he has shown that he can play here, and certainly from a team perspective, for the good of the team, I don't think they'd have any problem if that's what they decide to do, bringing Ratu back. I just wonder for the player, you know, is that the best thing for him? You know, but it is, you know, he's been around a couple of years now in the system, and maybe playing just 10 minutes a night for a while is okay at the NHL level. But I think they see him with a ceiling a lot higher than that. So ideally, they probably want him to play more.
So they get the win. It's a step in the right direction because it was a historically bad game on Wednesday. But do you look at this as an overall positive night, or is there still some lengths to go for where they need to get to?
Well, you know, it's always sunny in my world, Bick. So.
Well, you're so high above the clouds, too, you.
I am tall, that's true. Listen, I think they did a lot more right tonight than wrong, and I know it's easy to look at the score and say, well, it was 10-1 a year ago, and it's 3-2 tonight, and they should not have given up the tying goal. They were just way too passive, and Tyler Myers got his angle wrong on the shot. But I think you have to look at the opponent as well, and San Jose is a lot different team. They're not going to make the playoffs, but they're a lot different team now than they were this time last year. And the Canucks are too. Like the Canucks, when they rolled through San Jose and pillaged the Sharks winning 10-1. They were in the middle of arguably their best stretch of the season, certainly in terms of success. They went 8-0-1. That was the best stretch the Canucks had. But they were firing on all cylinders, excuse the cliche. You know, they'd just beaten Nashville 5-2. They were about to beat shut out Dallas and beat Edmonton again 6-2. Somewhere in there, they pumped the St. Louis Blues 5-0. So everything was going well for the Canucks last year. Not a whole lot has been going well for them lately, and especially on this last homestand, and particularly in that game on Wednesday. So although, you know, the performance isn't remotely as impressive as it was last November 2nd, I would argue that it's probably more important to the team what they did tonight versus what they did in that arena a year ago. I think there was a lot more that was good than was bad. And I saw talk, it said post game, that they're still giving up too many outnumbered rushes, and they are. You know, it seemed like the Sharks had about three chances in all first period, but they all came on an outnumbered rush. But I think the effort tonight and the level of engagement and the intensity with which the Canucks played were all traits that we had to see tonight. Like, I was sitting there with you guys talking after that 6-0 game on Wednesday. And I think we agreed, like, whatever the score is, we have to see a more urgent, a more focused, a far sounder Canucks team on Saturday than what we saw against the Devils. And I think we saw that.
Yeah, it was a step in the right direction. And as we were talking about earlier, I think it would have been naive to expect them to go from being as poor as they were against the Devils to all of a sudden being a 9 or a 10 out of 10. There's more work to get to that point. And I think what we want to see throughout this road trip is, by the time they come back to Vancouver, get results, and can they look closer to resembling the team we saw last season?
Well, can they stack shifts and periods together? Because that's what's been missing this season. They've been good at times in a lot of their games, but they just haven't maintained it. And I really thought tonight, you know, the first period was excellent. The amount of time, I don't know what the actual zone time was in the first period, but it seemed like the Canucks were stacking shift after shift after shift, where they just owned the puck and San Jose couldn't get out of their zone. And Canucks weren't quite as good in the second. I thought they were pretty good again in the third. It was sort of a funny period where nothing was called, and then all of a sudden in the third, there's four power plays in a row and kind of condensed, and you were just going back and forth on special teams. But I thought tonight was close to a 60-minute effort. It wasn't 60-minute execution, although it was much better than what they had shown the last couple of games. But I thought it was a step in the right direction that way. And to your point, Sat, you know, they have another game that everyone will expect them to win, and they should, against Anaheim. And then, you know, LA hasn't been great so far either. So, you know, maybe, who knows? Maybe they come home with three wins. Maybe they come home 1-1-1. You sure hope, having started tonight, they don't lose the next two. But I think, to your point, it's important that they start to reclaim some of that identity. And part of that identity is consistency and the level of effort and intensity that we saw tonight. And then if you start with that, you can work on these other things. You know, you can work on, the staff can get the players to stop giving up as many outnumbered rushes. They can get the third forward higher and just make sure everyone's a little more vigilant and aware. But if you don't have the effort and the intensity and the willingness to play through players and play directly and win pucks and get to pucks, how about that too? Like, get there first, not second. Then all that other stuff is secondary, because that's got to be the baseline. So I think the baseline looked, the Canucks looked a little more like themselves in this game. And now for the next two, they need to have, I think, that same level of intensity and urgency to their play. You know, they were skating well tonight. And then you can work on all the other stuff.
Two guys that get the goals tonight, Piyu Suter and Jake DeBrusk, are they candidates to be invited onto Power Play 1 here moving forward?
I thought the Power Play had a lot of good looks tonight. It was only a couple of chances. So at this point, I'm going to say yes, they're candidates, but I'd be surprised if there's a change for next game to start, because I thought the first unit looked dangerous tonight. And they didn't register a whole lot on target, but they certainly had a lot of looks. You know, Besser, a couple of looks, Quinn Hughes as well. I'm trying to think who had a chance right at the side of the net. Maybe it was Besser again. Anyways, I thought the power play looked more dangerous tonight. And again, everything's with a grain of salt, and you know, different opponents offer you different things. But I thought that unit looked dangerous. To me, you know, I've thought about this a little bit. One of the problems, and I may have mentioned it on our show, we spent so much airtime together. Sometimes I forget what I've bored you guys with.
I never forget what you say, though, Ian. I wait on every word.
All right. Well, I feel like the consequence of bringing Connor Garland up to the first unit is that the second unit is now lost.
Right.
Like early on, Garland was driving that second unit, and they played a different way. They were a little more direct, a little simpler than the first unit in how they played. Although at times it's hard for anybody to be more complicated than this first unit when it plays, which is part of their problem. But taking Garland away from that second unit, now whenever the second unit gets out, it just seems like it's basically just running out the clock on the power play. They're not getting much done. So eventually I'd like to see him, whether it's Garland, whether it's a rebalancing. You know, we saw the one power play last game where Miller and Garland were both off the flanks just for one turn. Whatever they have to do, I'd like to see them find a way to get back where they have a second unit. All the focus, understandably, is on the first unit, and that's the most important thing. That unit has to get going. But I think ultimately, you're a much more dangerous team if you have two units that feel like they have some chemistry, especially if they approach the power plays different ways. If they present a different challenge to the penalty killers, one unit from the other. And when you have that, as they looked like they had the first couple of games of the season, at least if one unit goes dry, you feel like, well, we might get a goal out of the second unit. Mm-hmm. You know, when they come on and maybe the penalty killers are tired, maybe they, you know, whatever. And right now it's all or nothing on the first unit, and mostly it's been nothing. So it's a problem.
Yeah, it really has been, and we'll see if they can get things going on the power play on this road trip, the next game coming up on Tuesday against the Ducks. Ian, that brings us to the end of the show. I know you're joining the team on the trip, so we'll chat with you from Anaheim on Tuesday, and we look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca as well.
Okay, Sat. So you're getting out on time tonight.
Yeah, we're actually out on time, yeah. So
I'm looking at my phone. It's 11:26. I'm used to blabbing on well past 11:30, 11:31, 11:32. Start telling you about what I made for dinner or...
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, we have a lot of time for that as well. But, you know, sometimes we actually do end on time, and tonight's one of those evenings, I suppose.
All right. Well, happy Saturday night, and I'll talk to you guys from Anaheim.
Yeah, you got it, Ian. Thanks so much. That is Ian McIntyre. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. Bic, I look forward to chatting with you coming up on Tuesday on the postgame show, Canucks and Anaheim Ducks. You got the People Show coming up on Monday, and a lot of football to watch tomorrow.
Certainly. And set your clocks back.
Yes. And also Manchester United, Chelsea tomorrow morning.
Yeah, 8:30.
So I'm going to hate you tomorrow morning so much. I can't wait. All right.
I do it 24/7 already with you, so it's fine.
There you go. Now I finally get to do it once every in a blue moon. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening and participating on the post-game show. Always a pleasure. Thanks for all of you for being a part of it. Special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory, our producer. He's Bick Nazar. I'm Satyar Shah. This has been the Canucks Central post-game show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.